From the newsroom of the Oklahoman, I'm Ben Felder, and this is The Source. On Monday, the state of Oklahoma and Johnson & Johnson made closing arguments in a case over opioid addiction that had lasted for 33 days. The Oklahoman had a reporter in the Cleveland County courtroom each one of those days, and for nearly all of them, the Oklahoman's Randy Ellis was there covering. And first off, Randy, welcome back. It seems like you've been away for quite a while, stuck in a courtroom just cranking out copy, covering what is a complicated case.
It was a complicated case, but certainly one of national interest, and glad to be there on behalf of Oklahomans.
Yeah. And so the state of Oklahoma going after pharmaceutical companies, in this case Johnson & Johnson, accusing them of creating this opioid crisis in a variety of ways, of filling Oklahoma with opioid drugs, with pushing the sales onto doctors. But what was kind of the core of the case for the state over the last few weeks?
Really, the core of the case was that Johnson & Johnson carried out a multifaceted marketing campaign and essentially controlled about every way that doctors get their information about opioids. Johnson & Johnson had a say in it. People are well aware, I guess, that they have sales reps that visit doctors' offices and tell them about prescriptions. And there was testimony that these sales reps portrayed opioids as having a low rate of addiction and encouraged doctors to prescribe them. But they also, what people may not know so much about before the trial anyway, was that they paid for the research. Most of the research that was done on opioids that came out with these rates of addictions was funded by Johnson & Johnson. They paid for the continuing education seminars that doctors go to keep up on the latest information in their field. There was testimony that they didn't have say in just exactly what the doctor said during these continuing education seminars. Certainly when somebody's picking up the tab, mm-hmm. that can have an influence on what's said. Taking them out to meals, just every way that you can imagine that doctors relied on to get information about opioids, Johnson was there.
Yeah, they kind of created a scene that reminded me of kind of the lobbying industry. And so the state is accusing pharmaceutical companies, Johnson & Johnson in this case, of controlling the message. So when it came for Johnson & Johnson's turn to speak, what did they really hang their defense on?
Well, a lot of their defense was that we don't prescribe. It's doctors that prescribe. And they contended that their influence was really just educational, that they were trying to educate doctors about opioids and the good and bad points about it. They contended that there were a lot of other factors that caused Oklahoma's opioid problems, the illicit drug trafficking. Thefts from pharmacies. There was evidence presented of hundreds of thousands of pills stolen from pharmacies, many by pharmacy technologists that worked there. So their message was, yes, Oklahoma has an opioid problem, but we're not really the cause of it.
Yeah, saying it's a lot more complicated than just targeting, you know, one person or one entity in this. So this is a judge will decide this case. There is no jury. And I know you don't want to speculate on how the judge will decide. But when you think back over the last several weeks, did you get any indication on who you felt like was kind of making the most compelling argument? I mean, I don't know if you judged how the judge's response or maybe questions or anything like that. But as you walk away from the case and you assess it all, do you feel like anybody left with a clear upper hand at all?
Well, the two or three points during the trial, the pharmacy companies had moved to have the charges dismissed, saying that there wasn't enough evidence to even go mm-hmm. to the point where you had to reach a verdict. The judge overruled those. So I guess that would indicate that he, at least at those points in the trial, felt like there was evidence that might warrant a verdict. Mm-hmm. I would not be able to get in the mind of the judge as to what he might or might not award, and as he gets to looking closer at evidence, what he might decide. But there were moments in the case that both sides presented some pretty compelling information. One of certain things hit you during the course mm-hmm. of the trial, like One of the things that struck me was when there was evidence presented about the company paying its sales representatives, specifically targeting the highest prescribers of opioids for additional sales visits. You know, that would, as a layperson, you think the people that are prescribing lots of opioids, that might be a sign for caution.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the state was looking at many of those same doctors as being overprescribers and ended up charging some of them with running essentially pill mills. And yet these same doctors were being targeted by sales representatives who were encouraging them to prescribe more.
Yeah.
They also were, you know, paying some of the high prescribing doctors around the country to speak for them, you know, giving them speaking fees to do it. So when you look at that, you think, boy, is that a responsible thing to do? Or should they have been talking to those doctors during those sales visits about, hey, are you sure you're not prescribing too much? Especially when you look at statistics that show like more than 6,100 Oklahomans died from prescription drug overdose from 2000 to 2017. That's a lot.
Yeah. So you already said that you can't get into the mind of the judge, but that's now where this case lies. It'll be up to the judge to decide. So what, give us a little bit of a look of what we should expect in the timeline. We can't predict when a judgment will rule, but do we have an idea on how long it might take?
Sure. The judge in court said that he would give each side till July 31st to file proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which is essentially each side telling the judge what they would like him to rule. Once he receives those, he said he would take an additional month, essentially, about to go over that before issuing a ruling, and indicated that he would call everybody back into court to make his ruling. So that would put it toward the end of August, early September, with the judge telling people what he decides.
Yeah. And what's at stake, both for Oklahoma and for the nation, because there's other similar cases that are about ready to begin that this could have an impact on. So what's at stake in the ruling?
Well, quite a lot, both locally and nationally. Locally, the state's asking for $17.5 billion, a little more than that. Doesn't mean it's going to get it. Could get nothing, could get any fraction of that amount. They've laid out a plan of what they would like to do with that money that includes everything from funding addiction treatment to PR campaign to warn people and doctors about the dangers of drugs, and just, I mean, it went on for pages, the things that they would like to do. For the nation, what's at stake? This is the first to go to trial of, hundreds of similar cases that have named drug companies as defendants in cases. All eyes are on Oklahoma, watching to see what the judge does here as kind of a bellwether of what can be expected in other states. More than 1,700 of the other cases are consolidated in Ohio in a federal court proceeding where they're grappling with many of the same issues.
Yeah. And finally, you know, I think about Attorney General Mike Hunter, who has been in office for a couple of years, won election last year, re-election. He was appointed to fill the vacancy created by Scott Pruitt, who went to D.C. You know, for being early in his time in office, you know, this is a pretty big thing to come out swinging on. You know, this is a legacy making thing. And, you know, he's put a lot of his cards on the table when it comes to this case. How has Attorney General Hunter been involved in this? I know he's been at the trial and he's been the face of this. But what has been his message throughout the trial? And what was his message after the closing arguments on Monday?
His message was basically that he believes that the drug company should be held responsible for this. He's come under attack from various quarters for doing this, including the lawyers for tort reform who've contended that he's made Oklahoma look like a bad state for businesses because he's going after businesses. So yeah, I mean he's got a lot at risk at this. Some of his risk, I believe, was alleviated when a couple of the other pharmacy companies that were originally named as defendants in the case entered into plea agreements with Purdue Pharma agreeing to pay $270 million and Teva $85 million. That, you know, if he had gone in and got totally nothing out of it, it would have been a huge setback, I would think, for him. But the fact that he's already gotten a substantial amount of money shows that at least some of the pharmacy companies had fear that the case had merit. So I would say he doesn't have as much on the line as he would have before the case. But still, yeah, if he wins a big judgment, that'll be a big deal mm-hmm. for him nationally.
Yeah. Well, it'll be very interesting to see where this case goes. And a lot of impact both here in Oklahoma and across the nation. We know you'll be following that. But after 33 days of excellent coverage in the Cleveland County courtroom, Randy, thanks so much for your time, and hope you get a little bit of rest this week.
Oh, thank you.